You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
Welcome to The Dan Nichols Show this week, where if you are one of the three people watching it, that's my mum, Ethel, and Beverly at the Bridge Club just outside of Hollywood in Northern Ireland, you'll be able to see. If you are listening, as most of you do, you won't be, so I shall inform you. We are back at the Cape Grace, regular Cape Town home, and we have to be in Cape Town because the demands of my guest were ridiculous. He wanted a two-bedroom suite just to film in. He arrived in a helicopter on a yacht and got marched up by an entourage of people, but it's all worth it because he's one of the great stars of Cape Town comedy, and he's also somebody, Yasin Barnes. I always forget quite how tall you are, and I'm not a terribly short person, but the door opens and this tall, strapping, could be a kind of Middle Eastern action hero type walks in through the door and lights up both the room and the show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm a lighthouse in a crowd of people. When people go, oh no, I'm standing next to the tall guy with the specs, that's what they see me in the crowd as.
Now, this is slightly accentuated because you are wearing the largest pair of Crocs I have ever seen.
With extra.
You've got platform Crocs, and from about, let's say, size 22. Now, those are size 12s. I think those are the largest feet we've ever had on the Dan Nichols Show. And a pair of bright white Crocs that could be a lifeboat on the Titanic. It's a fabulous statement of intent.
It's the boat that I sailed in on. I just wave them as I go through.
Oh, dear. Well, it's lovely to have you on the show, and that's lovely to be able to chat to you in a little more detail, because I remember the past occasion we've had has all been a little briefer. But I was also trying to remember the first time Yasin Barnes cropped up on my horizon. And I remember murmurs from some of the elderly Cape Town comedians, people like Stuart Taylor and Kurt Schoonrad, well before your time, you probably won't have heard of them, saying, no, there's this young kid with glasses. If they'd had kind of a slightly bigger extra on the Big Bang Theory, this is your man. He's obsessed with sport. He's got a terrible weakness for puns. And he's very, very, very funny. And that seems like both yesterday and a decade ago.
I feel like the obsessed with sport part is the wrong part. Those are two truths and a lie over there. Sport, I only watch sport because there's jokes to be made. That's the only reason I watch, because I go, there's someone's surname that's going to be ridiculous. There's a joke for me over there. Yeah, sorry.
Well, it's what you've made this incredible career out of. And I think every single comedian I've ever had on the show, the point of departure is almost always, well, I was going to be a doctor. My parents wanted me to be an engineer. I'd started my plumbing course and then I did a stand-up show, or I auditioned for another David Carl special on SABC that has still not been paid for. And on I went. What was the Yasin Barnes filter into comedy?
Trajectory. So I saw it on Twitter. My Twitter picked up back when it was still 140 characters, and I'd linked. Firstly, I was doing a lot of odd jobs. Like, I worked in retail, I worked at a diamond grading company, I worked in graphic design. I did all these things where I thought I could do. Started Twitter, my Twitter picked up, and someone was like, yo, don't you want to try this on stage? I tried it on stage, and then I was like, this is my drug. And then I worked in insurance for like a year, and at some point I had to tell my parents.
Because that's normally the natural segue, yeah. Insurance salesman to award-winning stand-up comedian.
Multi-award-winning.
Both of them.
It's been a while. And then I think my parents, because they saw me fail at so many things, they were like, oh, this is another thing you're going to try.
Do it for a week and move on.
We'll see you around. And then the community started telling my parents, yo, we saw your son perform. And my parents were like, no, he doesn't. Like, I don't think they took me serious for the first few years. And then they came to watch me, and then they started seeing like the hype bill, and they were like, oh, he's funny outside of our house. Because my mom's a mom. If ever I do jokes and she's like, this is not your work, so keep quiet. Or she will like, let me stand at the end of the table. She's like, oh, you want to tell jokes? Now perform me. Tell them auntie's jokes. Yeah.
I know a lot of people who are very good writers, very entertaining writers, very funny writers. And that doesn't translate into a performance because you pop them up in front of a camera or give them a microphone and they freeze, and it's not an element that they have been able to transcribe. And yet that's something that seems to have come quite easily. What was there an element? Was there a scene in the school plays? Were you making people laugh growing up?
No. So I, firstly, I'm the baby of the family. And I think when you're the baby of the family, you grow up being praised for attention, because you're just like, oh, dance for the aunties, perform there. So I think that was always in me. And then at school, I used to make jokes, and then they were always, you know, my jokes. It's puns. It's dry dad jokes. And I used to make them at school to a point where they didn't like it, and they used to call bad jokes the Yasins. So
it's what a legacy to have.
Yeah, but when you're 16, it's not a legacy, it's an insult. So people in other classes would make these jokes and they go, oh no, that's a Yasin. And it would hurt. And then right now I go, oh, I play my balls with the Yasins. That's the way it works. So I think it's always been there, but I was never like the guy at the braai making jokes. I was never the guy that was always like ready to go. But when stand-up found me, because I think being on stage, being alone, was like a nice place to go. This is only me. I don't need to rely on anybody else. It's just me and mine.
You mentioned your parents. You've got the three older sisters. What did they make of their tiny little baby brother suddenly deciding that, having failed at 26 other jobs, he now wanted to try stand-up comedy?
I think they also just saw it as a hobby. Like, oh no, it's just a hobby. But my sisters still cringe because they don't understand that the jokes I make with them, if people pay for. So they don't understand, like, oh no, it's like a legit thing. And then I think once they started seeing me on TV, and then they were like, because I think South Africans think when you're on TV, you have made it and you have money.
It is a real measure. I think it's decreasing slightly. And now I went to the hairdressers the other day. I do it once every 6 months. And I went in and the lady said, oh, you're that wine guy from Instagram. And yeah, that's kind of, you get that redefined where 10 years ago, oh, you've got your own show on television. That's as big as it gets. And now, oh, you've got 50,000 followers on Instagram. I think that measure is shifting a bit.
Oh, are the mighty have fallen. 8 years on TV, but you're known for like, oh, you a video. That's
and,
all that it is.
And importantly, in that key demographic of suburban females 50 to 60, very much, I think my target market, Dave Levinson's target market. I think that's that's the two of us there. You've spoken in the past a lot about the comedians that you look up to, you admire. I think Stephen Wright in particular comes up time and again. And he's one of those guys. I remember watching Stephen Wright for the first time, and you're looking at it and you're listening and you're going, no, I don't want to laugh at this. And then you start and then you can't stop. And they just come thick and fast. And it's the sheer weight of, oh my God, these are so bad. I can't believe it. And I'm laughing my head off. And it sounds like, yeah, here's just a written list of really bad puns. And yet when you get, as you do, that delivery right, you build up that momentum, that rhythm, that pace, and people are just shaking their head in disbelief. It's a lot more of an art form than I think people realize.
I feel like it is because that's my style. But I also think, so I have ADHD, which means I think in short bursts. So it's the reason for me being able to write short jokes. But I feel like nowadays people hold back on laughs. Like, I don't understand, like, the world is sad. Why would you not want to laugh? Like, if something goes, they go, oh no, I'm better than the joke. So I think normally when it's short jokes or like puns, they're like, But I'm like, choose happiness, just laugh. It's a silly gag, but like your body needs to just let go. So I think nowadays I start and I'll just hammer and I'll just go down the list of like silly gags. And then eventually they go, okay, I can let go of these things. And also it's jokes you can take home. That's essentially what I want to give people, like short jokes. It's not a story. It's just like, oh, here's a thing. I wrote a Halloween joke and I just... What's the vampire's favorite artist?
I don't know.
Gladys Knight. Because they're Gladys Knight.
So I'm going to shamelessly steal that, not for a large corporate audience, but for my absolute favorite audience for those lines, which is my 11-year-old daughter. because there is no greater joy as a father than embarrassing your children and watching them cringe. I delivered one. Here's one you've given me, one I shall give you one in return. There's a 98% chance you not only know it, but actually wrote it initially. But what do you call two Spanish firemen, Yasin?
What?
Jose and Jose B.
I love a joke so much.
And what I love about that joke is I'll watch people cringe, shake their heads, but inside I get so much joy because I know how bad it is and I still delivered it with great glee. And it just makes me so happy.
That's my whole life. I just want to tell silly jokes. I have nieces and nephews who don't understand. Like, they've come to my shows. They've seen, I'll say, thousands of people laugh for me, but they still give me no, like, they just like, oh. I've done fundraisers for them. We've sent them overseas and stuff, and they still just, and I go, these teenagers are so ungrateful.
So I actually interviewed them ahead of this show, and they denied all knowledge of you. They said, nope, there's no relation. We've never met. I showed them photos of you together. They said it was AI.
I hate them. We also, I feel like nowadays we give kids too much fun. As adults, we must start taking fun back. Like, they, I don't know.
Those
like,
good old days when you could beat children and they knew their place, yes. You know,
also, how much fun would a children's party be if there was no children? Like, you could just jump on a jumping castle. So adults, take back your parties and let's have children's parties for us.
The fun that you so clearly get from comedy is a subject that's been much discussed in comedy circles for as long as I can remember, whereby with some it is a genuine joy and with some it is it's a safe space, it's a mask, it's this gets me through times that are maybe not so much fun. And that classic, the clown is happy to the audience and sad behind. I do genuinely get the sense that there is huge joy in what you do and that comedy is not trying to make up for something else. Or am I wildly wrong and you've been on Prozac for the last 12 years?
I should lie down on a couch now, like, this is a therapy session. I think it's cathartic for both ends of the people. Like, the comedian telling the joke, I think it lets them vent and have control. Because as people, we also have so many things we're not in control of in our lives, that things just happen. And when you're on stage, you go, I am in control of this. And then as an audience member, when you laugh, you don't think of anything else but the thing that made you laugh. And I think, again, in today's times, we need that more than anything else. It's just to go, it's the cheapest holiday you can go on is to laugh. And I think when people come to comedy shows, it's like you can feel when they leave, there's like a, and that's, maybe I'm also just glorifying something that I'm telling dick jokes at the same time. It's not as deep as anything. It's not that deep. It's just like, oh, it's a joke. You laugh and your body feels better afterward.
I think it's a wonderful philosophy to have and to embrace, and it's one we don't embrace enough. So good for you for doing that. When you do walk off stage, how much does your "what did they think of me" have an impact on how you're feeling?
Oh, that's the deep question over there. I think it's because I've been doing this for so long now, I think I've learned how to balance. Like, I've done well enough on stage for long enough to know what rooms mean what. Because there's some rooms that's 15 people, and I go, we can have the...
That's one of your bigger ones. Back to the prize.
I was performing at lunch by my parents' house. We had the aunties and uncles over. So that thing, sometimes is a small room and we can have the best night. We can have big rooms where it's like, it's a little shaky. Or maybe even, and I think you'll know, like, a performer's, you can have a performer's death where the room will enjoy it. But like, you go afterwards, you go, I don't think I was fully on my full step over there. And I think afterwards you'll deal with it in your head to go, oh no, this is the factors. That's the thing. But tomorrow I get to do it again. And I think that's the joy of stand-up, is we get to die again tomorrow.
So I've avoided going into stand-up comedy. Firstly, I think audience find it difficult to believe that somebody who's clearly got a modeling background can be a comedian to take seriously.
Inshallah.
But it's more because when you walk out as a comedian, everybody says, right, make us laugh. Whereas the MC work that I do a lot, if I do make somebody laugh, well, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
But what I do find is I will be watching an audience if the lighting is, and you can see, and 99 people are chuckling away and smiling, laughing. And there's that one person. And it's that one person I will remember at the end of the night. No, and then I'll try and catch their eye, and I'll try and say something extra funny and look on the corner of my eye. And nope, still not laughing. And yeah, it could just be that you know they've got something terrible in their life, like they've supported United for the last four seasons, and it's just a really they're just not having a good day.
We all have our pains.
But that's the one I will remember.
But I think it's the thing I try to speak on stage is that comedy is like the gym. Or show is like the gym.
I'm glad you're using an analogy. I can immediately identify.
You seem like gym people, so I'm just trying to...
It's my happy space.
You don't go to the gym and tell the trainer, make me thin. You can't go to a comedy show and go, make me laugh. That's force and that's no consent. Like, as a country, we must have consent for everything. Yo, like, you must also... When people come to shows, they must want to laugh. I think that's another thing. A lot of people don't know that they must... They are part of the show as much as we are part of the show. So when I see that one person that doesn't want to laugh, I will stop the show and cuck that, and I'll cuck that person out because I'm like, you're wasting your money. The economy is tough. If you spend money on a ticket, just very well laugh.
Well, look, in fairness, that was how we met and it has gone a lot better since then. And I have started chuckling occasionally.
Also, I think the last time you saw me perform was at the Goliaths show at the... I think it was in the theatre or something.
Out at Grand West Casino.
Yeah, no, Grand West Teatro, I think.
Yes, Monte Casino. Yes, right.
And I remember seeing you and then afterwards, like also seeing you not laugh. And then afterwards, you just sent me a message and I was like, okay, we in the fine. Dan doesn't hate me. He just doesn't know how to smile. all the 8 years of Botox is getting to his face.
And inexpensive Botox, which hasn't worked as well as I'd hoped that it would. It's been a career that's by no means finished. You've got a very, very long road ahead of you, but it is one that you can look back on with an impressive body of work. You've done some great stuff on television. You've done shows all over the place. You've had a real impact. Do you allow yourself, especially in this mad world of we're running from events to shoot to gig to writing session, to occasionally just step back, take a deep breath and go, you know, I've done all this stuff. That's quite impressive. I've made it to no small degree.
I think I can die already. Like, I think I've done enough to... There's enough people that's going to post black and white photos of me when I die. Like, just do a rest in peace. Asim Fancy was a good one. I think twice a year I have a moment where I go, let's look back at what we did. And these are the things. Because it's always in Jan... When we worry about what's, as a freelancer, maybe you go through the same anxiety where you're like, what am I going to do this year? Or where's the money going to come from? Am I going to work? And you, even though there will be work, you just like, you have that panic. And then I put out plans for the year and by June, I've done all of the year's work already. And then in June, I go, what did I do? And what do I want to do? And also with comedy, I feel like it's been a cheat for my life. Like, I've done things I shouldn't have done. I've done things I didn't even dream of doing. I've written for movies. I've acted. I've directed specials, comedy specials as well. And it's just like all these things I thought I must do in 20 years' time when I'm an older comedian. And now I get to do it as like a child. Oh, I still feel like a child. And so I'm very grateful for, all the stuff I've done. And I'm trying to think of what's next. Oh, we're starting a new movie again also. I just want to make silly things. I just want to make people happy. I want to make dumb stuff. I feel like we need more dumb in the world.
And at just 53, you do have this wonderful spectrum to cast back upon.
2 years time, I'm going to be in Sasa. Like, I'm as soon as I can get Sasa money, I'm going to be there in the line. I don't care.
When you do look back on all of it, I think every entertainer, every athlete, everybody who has achieved a degree of success will look back. And there are two moments that always fascinate me. One was the moment where they kind of first realized, yes, I've made this step. I've gone over the edge. I've leapt from the precipice, and it's okay. And then it's the one where a little further down the road, a voice has said, "Hey, you've actually done something quite special." And it's often, and I say this regularly on the show, which is why our production team of 17 has fallen asleep again. But there is
a little week.
It's often a moment that we don't expect. Often with the athletes, we think, oh, well, it must be when you won the Rugby World Cup. But I did an event recently with Brian Abana where he speaks of the moment that will always define his career. It was not winning that Rugby World Cup, but it was playing his first game for the Springboks against England, coming on, scoring a try with his first touch, and knowing that that's what he wanted to do and he must work hard to continue it. So if we go, and I think the Habana-Yassin Barnes parallel is one that's often used in social commentary. If we look at those two moments for you, the one where you realize, yes, I've taken the step into comedy, and then further down that road, hey, Yassin, you're getting this.
Also, both Brian and I are both great sidesteppers. Let me just tell you that. I feel like as South African, sidestepping is in our genes.
In your case, child support lawyers and people who work for SARS.
Debit orders. Yeah, we're moving in silence. I think it was my first time performing at the Baxter. So I won a competition, and as the prize, you perform at the festival. And they made me... So the lineup is myself, Riyad Musa, Nico Rabinowitz, and Trevor Noah.
Ah, yes, yeah. the great South African comedy quartet.
Classic. And
three world famous people and somebody who'd won a ShopRite competition to come to Baxter for the evening.
Trevor did win that competition.
Touché.
And that year, Trevor broke his leg, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, so you must go after Trevor." And I was just, you remember standing there going, I'm about to throw up. For the first 2 minutes, everybody's just chanting Trevor's name. Like, he is sitting there with a cast, and I'm watching that going, how do I follow this thing? And then, yeah, I just had to, obviously, because it's the job, you got to do it, and it went well. Like, because also that thing of, he did what he done, and I do something different, that's what I do. And then that's the day I learned, like, I can't be compared to Trevor Noah. But the thing of, like, it's all comedies are different and they will accept everything. No one goes, oh, we'll get a laugh less for this because it's not as funny as that. So that was for me a big moment. And then 2 years ago, so I ran the Jai Funny Championship, which is, it's the competition I won that I now run as well, which is a full circle of its own. So now I get to give the platform to other comedians as well, like younger comedians. So it's interesting. So now I get to see them grow up and see them like perform and like perfect what they do and perform at the Baxter and go on to do other things as well. So it's, that for me was a growing moment to go, I've been around enough.
I love the fact you've chosen that as your memory there, because you have done so much, not just through the Jive competition, but through a number of platforms of bringing up other young comedians, giving them an opportunity, whether it is an open mic night or I'm headlining, come and join me for 5-10 minutes, because not everybody does that. Not everybody is quite so open. There are, across the entertainment world, those who safeguard their space quite jealously.
Gatekeepers.
They are indeed. I'm very much one of those. In fact, I reluctantly have other guests on the show, but we have to contractually. But when I see the number of young comedians, and I've heard young guys talk about, we're really grateful. Yassin gave us a night at this particular show, or Yassin gave us some great words at that Jive competition. And it's a wonderful attribute to you. And I think it is, we spoke jokingly about a legacy earlier, but I think that is an absolutely fantastic legacy to be able to have.
I am grateful for it, but I also feel like someone gave me the chance to do it for the first time. Like, I only have a matric. That's the wildest thing of all this I've done.
Is that quite recent?
It's also our fake those papers. I'm South African, please. Qualifications are a joke. I have 3.5 years, 4.5 years of a 3-year degree that I still didn't finish. And my father still shows me the receipts that he paid for those things.
What was that degree in?
A BA Psych and English. And I only have an English module to finish. to get the degree, and I just didn't go back. I was like,
well, I studied English myself. If you do finish it, there is a job waiting, tables waiting for you.
Waiting for God. That's what's coming. And yeah, so someone gave me the opportunity to do stand-up, and I realized that we also in a country where they, not everybody gets qualifications, but we're also in a country where people talk, we socialize, we get... If my aunties and uncles understood that comedy was a career, they would have booming careers. Like, we grow up watching our aunties just roasting the family, making fun at events, like bringing joy to homes. And now I go, if I can give that to someone, like someone gave it to me, then, you know, then I've, again, my job is done here. So if ever I see someone on the come up, someone, as long as the person is trying, I'll be there to help. I'm not there. Even if they're talented, but they're lazy, lose me. I don't care. But people that are like trying and developing themselves, I'll give them whatever I have. I also, gatekeeping is such a weird thing because I'm just like, whatever is destined to me, it's very airy-fairy, but like whatever is destined to me will come for me. You can't, if I share, I don't lose. If I give you, no one says, oh, Yasin gets less because you get, just we all get now more.
So I'm very glad you've made that particular point because it segues nicely into a request I have for you as a young up-and-coming performer myself in South Africa. You mentioned earlier Riyad Musa. I, along with Joey Razdeen, intensely disliked both of them because they were fundamentally dishonest in that they promised me I would get a cameo slot in Material 5, I think was the next one they were planning to make.
Material 2 Furious.
Be a brilliant title. And it never came about. So as it stands, the high point of my acting career, so to speak, is playing the conductor, and I'm not making this up, playing the conductor in the music video of Kurt Darren's Sturmtrain, where for 6 scintillating, breathtaking, oh my God, has this been directed by the Coen brothers stretch, I get to wave my conductor's flag while wearing a white coat that appears to have been borrowed from a local government hospital as the train pulls into a Germiston siding and a collection of extras wander off the train behind me. So thank you, Kurt, for popping me in your music video. I took great delight in being part of Sturmtrain. But I think I've got more to me. I think there is an Al Pacino inside who needs to escape. You mentioned you're working on a new film with no idea what this film is at all. This is how open I am and how much trust I have in you, Yasin. What is the film and can I get a part in it?
Yes, you can get a part. I don't know that we haven't figured out the film yet. So far, we just came up with a name. It's Tokai Forest Camp. So by all means, maybe we'll find a place for you. Actually, let's have you be the bus driver this time.
A big step up.
You're conductor to conductor. Maybe you can just hold 2 wires. It's a conductor. Not all these jokes work, I'm sorry.
And believe me, this is the 7th take of recording this show. This is the best one we've had so far. I tried very hard when we still had the Dan Nichols show running. I wanted to do an insert where I went to Binnenlanders, which I think we'll agree is probably for both of us our favorite Afrikaans medical-based soap opera. And the premise was that I'd been given this spot as a guest on Binnenlanders, and I was going through acting classes and practicing and delivering and working on what is already a near flawless Afrikaans accent. And then it cuts to Dan's big moment, and there I am, and I'm the coma patient lying there doing absolutely nothing. And I was so excited about doing this because it's exactly the sort of completely silly, daft, wonderful thing where there's such a build-up and you're training and you're Shakespearean in your approach and I'm going method acting and I'm actually now going to go more Brecht here in my appreciation of it and I'm reading some Ibsen plays to get into the feel for it and then I'm a coma victim after all of that build-up. And Binnenlanders never happened for me and I think it could have been my big break.
And then also as the cut, you just go,
yeah. Like then, I'm in a coma and I still get it wrong. Halfway through, no, he's been in the coma for 6 weeks, sir. And then I just scratch my ear or
just a small.
Oh dear, Tokai Forrest Gump. But very excited by this.
On the note of a coma, right? I recently had this idea, and I want to pitch it to medical aides around the world. They must give us every year 2 days in a coma. We just medically induced coma for 2 days. You get to sleep for 2 days uninterrupted. No one gets to tell you anything. You also get to take the 2 days in the week. Because you come back to work and like, oh, where's the Excel sheets? And you go, I was in a coma. Leave me alone. So by all means, Discovery, phone me. I got ideas for you guys.
This sounds both like the time Nicholas Goliath faked a sore stomach to get out of work and ended up having his appendix removed because he took it to its natural end for not wanting to be found out. And then I don't know if you ever remember Kenneth Nkosi's brilliant show. It ran years ago. It was kind of a sort of reality show, Kenny Makenzo, it was called, where he'd go off. He did one brilliant episode where he went into the offices of the Freedom Front because he wanted to change all of the street names in Bloemfontein to his aunts and uncles. But he also did a terrific episode where he tried to get National Babalas Day declared, which was the day after a public holiday, so you could recover. So I think between you and Kenneth, there's
we're going to save the kind.
There's some work to be done.
Also, I don't think Babalas Day must be a day. I think Babalas Day must just be I'm coming to work late. Like, just give me till 12. I just want to sleep till 10, and I'll be at work at 12. That's all we need.
2 hour window for 3 cheeseburgers, a couple of liters of Coke, and a handful of Mypridol, and I'm back at work and good to go.
And a Musa, inshallah, that I'm going to come to work also. Also, this is Cape Town. We are really only working Mondays-ish to Friday morning. I think at 10 o'clock on a Friday morning, we start having traffic going home.
I haven't met those people who work on a Friday in Cape Town, but I look forward to that particular
Once occasion. I got an email on a Friday evening at 7 o'clock from someone working in Joburg, and then I was very much insulted. Like, this is not my religion. This is not what we practice. Call me on Monday at 1 o'clock when I'm in the office for an hour.
Joy of Johannesburg. Half of which now applies to Cape Town because there are only about 12 of us left in Johannesburg. Everyone else has moved down to Val d'Avie and is living in Rake Nettling's garden. The city is swamped. However big it becomes, however many more people arrive, it is still somewhere that is so fundamentally home for this kid from Athlone who made it big. And I can't see that ever changing.
This is home. Like, I spent a lot of time in Joburg, but also, does Joburg have one person per street light? And there's only like 12 left also. But I feel like Cape Town is home, and the rest of the world and the rest of the country is like, I just get to go visit and see other people that is me and that's not me. Because I feel like as South Africans, we're also the same person. Like, even no matter what life you live, we all know there's specific things that you go, that's my mom. Like, the experience of a chomp chocolate is like renowned. Oh, everybody knows a chomp is a chocolate that is always a 6 out of 10. no matter where you find it, you go, that's a South African chomp.
There's a very slight hint of staleness that's always in there that you can never get rid of.
It also has an expiry date as a joke.
Well, all chomps were made in 1961.
And still going strong.
In a factory somewhere in the East Rand.
And also, if you're just looking for its liquor, you know, you don't know what you want, but you find the chomp, you go, he does the job. And then also, as South Africans, we believe that a blue energy aid can solve most of our health problems. We just believe, like, it must be under medical aid at this point also.
Just above Zambuck and below Grandpa.
Yeah, and below, like, an actual medication. Just give me a blue energy aid.
I do have, on the subject of Cape Town, I have a serious request, because I can see your agent glaring at me because you've got another signing session to do. I love Cape Town. I went to university in Cape Town. My mother is from Cape Town. It's a city that has always been home. Many of my great childhood memories are playing on Fishhook Beach and building sandcastles and driving with my grandfather, who very clearly did not have a driver's license. So not much changes in Cape Town.
Very South African of him, by the way.
Very authentic.
And qualified for the job, still going to dial it.
And enthusiastically so. But whether it was growing up, not growing up, but spending Christmases, having come down from Zimbabwe, as so many Zimbabweans do, and hanging out on the beach or coming down to study, I think the breadth of my Cape Town experience has not been as extensive as it could have been. So what I'd like to do, when you have time in between making movies and being this big star and investing in the largest crocs known to man, I'd love to do Yasin's Cape Town tour. Come and explore it. Come and hang out in Athlone. Come and meet the family. Meet the sisters. See what they really think.
No one must meet my family because they will tell you what I'm really like. This is performative Yasin. When you see, I'm a small child in my mother's house, and I always will be. So my always, no one must meet my family.
My mother still phones me from Northern Ireland and asks, "Have you brushed your teeth, my darling?" Yes, mother, I'm 47 years old. I think I've managed that by now. But is that something we can do? And what would the highlights of that Athlone adventure be?
So I think we'd start with because I'm Cape Townian, a sunrise swim at St. James Beach.
Okay.
Just because the water's cold, but at the same time, it's a cold that pulls your life together. Again, medical aid is expensive. We need to find alternative healing. And I feel like the cold water will get you right.
Into the water, quick 20-minute lesson from an octopus, and out we come.
And then also you'll just have your insides go inner sides.
I'm actually cringing already at the thought of that water. Okay, morning swim. We're off to a bad start.
And then I think for like a lunch, because it's a morning swim. Then you go home and go sleep, because that's also Cape Townian. Like, don't reply to emails yet. Then for lunch, there's a Gatsby that we're going to get going.
All right.
Just because it must fill you for the rest of the day. Because
now, is this this is a generic part of, or is there a specific space that we would go for this Gatsby?
I would go Cozy Corner.
Yeah.
In Weinberg. Their Gatsby is like, it's well put together. Like, it doesn't just fall out completely. Like, it still holds itself. It's also got, it's like a family meal because it's chicken and egg on the Gatsby together, the mommy and the baby.
So this is obviously a massively global show, by which I mean we've got a guy in Lilongwe who accidentally tuned in 3 weeks ago. So Gatsby chicken.
So it's a full house chicken, char grilled chicken Gatsby.
Okay.
Right? That's a roll. That's, I'll say lettuce, tomato, chicken, egg, cheese, lots of sauce. Also a lot of chips also on it, and cut in four pieces. So it fills many people at the same time. Then from the Gatsby, I think it's an Eco Sisters. Eco Sisters also just like a dessert, but it's a good time for Cape Town. And then I think we'll take a walk through the gardens, maybe through town in the gardens. I'm trying to like give you like a picturesque view of what Cape Town looks like. Maybe some.
But I want the authentic Yasin.
Okay.
I want to hang out where this is Yasin's childhood. This is
okay.
This all home is for you.
It's Yasin adult, and we're staying at the whole day, like
in your Clifton apartment, surrounded by air hostesses and lingerie models.
Inshallah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of. Yeah. Then we'll probably go for karaoke. I love a karaoke. It sounds very silly, but I love performing because karaoke is not about good singing. It's about performing. Do you do karaoke?
I have done it occasionally under duress and usually the threat of physical violence. But yes, I have once or twice. In fact, I did it once in a small square in Bangkok where my delivery was so bad that even the Thais got up and left. And I once, there is a video of this, which thank God has never seen the light of day.
Roll the clip.
But there is a video. So over the years, I've done a lot of events with Ronan Keating, and he has a habit of thrusting a microphone in front of you. A smile on your face. So I have memorized these lyrics. I ended up singing that classic song from Notting Hill with Jean de Villiers in a karaoke bar in Tokyo during the 2019 World Cup.
What a love story.
And I think if you look closely enough, it does appear like we might be holding hands while we sing. And granted, he's a very good-looking man who in poor light could pass for a slightly older Heinz Winkler. So I'll take it happily. No shame there whatsoever. But by God, the singing is terrible.
But it was a good time.
It was a wonderful time.
If you can sing, don't do karaoke. That's the rules of the world, please, people. Don't come to karaoke. If you can't sing and you like to perform, that's the karaoke we want. But also, I want to see that clip now. Does that clip exist on the internet?
It doesn't exist on the internet.
Yet. Someone find it for us, please. I love karaoke because it's such a silly thing and it's like low stakes. I feel like I'm not a high stakes kind of guy. Like, I do small things in that space. And then also, I just love going to comedy also. I know it is my job, But one of the things I'll take you to is some of the grungiest, stickiest places. You know those places where you lift your feet?
And it holds slightly adhesive.
It holds your shoes, yeah. It holds your shoes hostage for like a second. Those are my favorite places to do comedy. Just because it's a gamble where you're going to see the worst and you're going to see the best at the same time. And then there's a place that one of the comedians own called Bobby that's in Bree Street. And it's just a shoebox of a space, but everybody's together and everybody just feels like, yo, we're here for a good time. And I think I like intimate spaces where we can all see each other. I'm not big on the masses of the people.
All right.
That's the Cape Town experience that I'll show you around.
All right. Well, we have got this recorded and we will preserve it on VHS so that we can hold you to it. Yassine's Tour of Cape Town, count me in. Also, a small role in Tokai Forrest Gump, which will probably not make the final edit, but will be available on the DVD special released in certain markets. And
the flea market. That's where you can find it. You can pirate it. It's going to be available on WhatsApp.
Green Market Square incoming. And then the other place I will look forward to seeing you is both in person and through the assorted prisms of social media on stages. Prisms, oh, but prisms could be, yes. If you're not watching, he's wearing orange overalls at the moment. Just the stages that you occupy, the joy that you give. I get personal delight in your story because I love those dreadful puns and the joy they give us. But also it's a wonderful success story. And to see someone who's not only doing something that he so clearly loves, enjoys, and is very good at, but is also so happy sharing with others, makes it a really heartwarming tale. So
please, can you speak at my funeral? Because that's the eulogy I want. No one else. I don't want comedians messing up this thing. Please, I'm assigning you now when I die. Just send that message to my family over there.
I am heavily booked, but early May next year is looking open. So come back to me on that one.
I was planning for March, but okay, we'll see.
On that happy, upbeat, both of our mothers are going to be having a word with us after this ending. Yassine, thank you very, very much indeed.
Thank you so much, Ray.
And I leave you just by saying that as a comedian who, yes, you're not devoted to sport, but you do invoke a lot of sport in your comedy, I can only put you down really as the sort of the semi-ref who went to private school, really, in terms of that quality of sporting comedy. And I say that because, of course, Simi is our producer, and he is going to burst into tears.
He's also sleeping on my couch at the moment.
It's always somebody's. Yassine Barnes, one of South Africa's great, I still say young because he's marginally younger than me, but at heart always will be, comedians, performers, comedy philanthropists, movie directors, and the man behind Tokai Forrest Gump. That's going to be massive. An absolute delight lighting up the Dan Nicholl Show this week, the one and only Yassine Barnes.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholl Show.